Welcome to the Butts in the Seats podcast, special four-year anniversary episode.
4 years.
Which is also just episode 118.
Woo! But that also means that tonight is Bitsy's 2.
Yeah.
2 years ago, Nick and I did this show, and we did an awards show. We got to the first Halloween Havoc, and we had these whole categories, and Nick put up a quiz for me. And we decided that every time we got to another Halloween Havoc, or around this time of Halloween, if they lined up, we would do the Bitsies again. This time, Halloween came faster than Halloween Havoc did. So, it's the four-year anniversary of us sitting down and doing the show. But we're not quite at Halloween Havoc yet, but we're doing it.
Yes, look, we did one 2 years in. We're doing the next one 4 years in.
Yeah, so it's every 2 years, essentially.
But that'll be at the end of the episode. We're not going to start with that. Because today, we are talking about the July 10th, 2000 WCW Monday Nitro.
Also known as the Nitro right after Bash the Beach.
Yes, so no Hulk Hogan.
Thank fuck.
I was going to say, Emily, what is it we usually do here? But it feels like a new era.
It does feel like a new era. So we talk about the downfall of WCW post Bash at the Beach 2000.
Yeah, no Hogan, no Bischoff.
The bullshit of the politics.
Russo is just on his own, it kind of seems like here. It's way less publicized if he still has a group or what, because the way he tells the Bash the Beach story, it's like, there's a room of people, so...
Yeah. Would you refer to them as the powers that be?
I would not.
Would you call them the powers to be?
I would not. So I imagine that this is going to be a longer episode with the Bitsies at the end. Luckily, I don't really have any backstage notes, because we kind of hit everything at Bash the Beach.
I mean, yeah, yesterday was the backstage notes.
Yeah, anything else that would have come up, it's like, nope, it's not really important right now.
So at this point is... Like, I'm assuming the locker room is aware of everything that's gone down. Because it's literally, what, 24 hours later?
Yes. I mean, the way they like to work the boys, it's 50-50. Plus, to this day, they haven't even fucking decided what the reality was. Sure. So, who the hell actually knows backstage who knows what?
Fair.
I think it's very much, look, we're here, we're plowing ahead. Commentary constantly says, yeah, we, like, can't really talk about it, so we're just not gonna...
Yeah, they're saying, like, legally they can't talk about it, which I think is a bit of a stretch. I don't think a lawsuit went into place that quickly, right?
I doubt it, but I can't rule it out. Again, we don't know what's a work, what's a shoot here.
Yeah, it's fucking annoying.
Like I said, today we're talking about the July 10th, 2000 WCW Monday Nitro, live from AEW country, Jacksonville, Florida.
Go Jags!
This show did a 2-6 to Raw's 6.0. Both shows are up this week, so I think it's just... Whatever distraction there was last week is not there.
Yeah.
And we will not have a rating for the next episode because it airs on a special day, which they remind us of about...
5 times?
It's a lot. I mean, it makes sense. Like, hey, watch our shit on Tuesday.
Yeah. So there's some, like, made-for-TV movie debuting on TNT next Monday. I can't remember what it was called. Doesn't matter.
It was part two of, like... Was it, like, Nuremberg?
Oh, yeah. Nuremberg. So it's like a, I'm assuming like a World War II movie. I don't know. But it's debuting next week. So Nitro will be on Tuesday next week. Tell your friends. Hey, tell your friends. Don't forget, did you tell your friends?
I do have to wonder if anybody like looked at the Tuesday ratings for next week and is like, oh, maybe we move to Tuesdays.
I bet it's like one guy backstage and then immediately everyone's like, you're fired. Get out of here. We're staying on Mondays.
Like I said, no real backstage notes, so let's just get right into this. We get Mike Tenay narrated Nitro stills, and like just talk about Booker T's backstory for the most part.
Yeah, it's basically, it feels like, hey, this guy that we put the belt on, you know how we didn't really tell you much about him, and he's been underutilized and, you know, shunned to the back. He's your champion now, I guess you should know something about him. Here's his whole back line.
And because they don't talk about the Hulk Hogan at all, it's like... Kind of weird that he suddenly has the belt based on where we left last week.
Yeah.
But we get the opening pyro. Tony Schiavone, Mark Madden, and Scott Hudson check in on commentary. No mention of Hogan. Scott Hudson notes that Booker T won the world title on his first shot.
Is it his first shot?
So, technically his first shot would have been in a World War III match for the title back in 95.
Okay.
His second shot would have been literally the Thunder before this.
That's what I thought. I figured he was up in the title area prior to this. Like,
I mean, literally the show before this. So it's like, you know, maybe not a real shot, but...
I guess.
Yeah, guys, it's literally Wednesday. It was his first shot.
Yeah. But it just kind of feels weird that commentary is trying to explain how crazy the pay-per-view was while also trying to sing Booker's praises, but also say nothing about what actually happened.
They are saying one other thing.
What?
Order the replay, fans.
Yes, they are saying that. But they're trying so hard to dance around this crazy Russo speech that happened. They're like, oh my God, the pay-per-view was wild. And Booker T is the champion. That was wild. Like, tell me why it was wild.
Well, not say, here on screen tonight, Vince Russo. Here backstage tonight, Vince Russo.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's good that we don't see him in the ring.
Yeah. And not here backstage, as we kind of noted, Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff. Because, like, if you were really that upset, why didn't you go to Jacksonville?
I mean, it was not that far away.
So we get Booker T coming out to the ring for his first entrance as champion. And once again, Tony's like, we can't talk about it. Order the replay. Booker says that he doesn't have a script and he's speaking straight from the heart. And, like, first thing he says, like, he just wishes his mom was here to see this.
It was very heart-wrenching. It was very sweet.
Booker runs through his journey and thanks the fans, and he says to his doubters, don't hate the player, hate the game. And I'm like, oh yeah, that was your catchphrase for a little bit.
Was it?
Very briefly.
Oh.
He then calls out Goldberg and calls him a little bitch for his arm injury, and then a mark for himself. I'm like, oh.
But not only does he call out Goldberg, he does a Goldberg impression. He, like, puts on a Goldberg voice. I've never considered Booker to be the kind of person to do an impression, but it was very weird.
Oh, yeah. I think this is just like a harbinger of things to come.
Oh, no.
Because once the mid-2000s hits, it's like, I want to do voices. I want to go Hollywood. I mean, in TNA for like a full year, he's just doing a Forrest Whitaker impression.
Oh, Jesus.
Booker then invites his wife, not Charmel, LaVestia.
LaVestia.
That's a name. He invites her out to the ring. We get a lovely sign of the crowd right during that moment of it's a Confederate flag and the text just says, my dick's erect. My dick's erect.
I didn't see the poster, so I'm having a hard time like figuring out what they were trying to make it seem like they were saying. Wrecked? Like W-R-E-C-K?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
Boner, isn't it?
If you're going to be racist, at least do it right.
Booker thanks his wife and says he loves her, and I'm like, until he's interrupted by his theme song, and out comes Stevie Ray. Stevie gets in the ring with a mic, and commentary's like, don't fucking ruin this moment, you asshole.
I was ready for him, too, because he started out kind of seeming like he was about to.
Yeah, like, Booker's ready to fight, but he's like, no, just, like, listen, dude. Stevie runs through their childhood as Scott Hudson breaks kayfabe by saying they grew up in Houston. I'm like, excuse me,
sir. I thought it was Harlem.
Stevie says he never thought Booker would become champion, and he's proud of him, and he loves him, and the two hug until Scott Steiner's music hits.
The reason that I thought that was going to be a heel turn of Stevie Ray against Booker is because, like, he says, like, oh yeah, I never thought that you would be the champion, but all of your successes are kind of because of me. Like, they happened with me, so this is kind of my championship, too. So I thought he was going to be like, actually, you're not the champion, I am. Like, I did this for you. I could have seen that happening.
Yeah, I think it's just meant to build the fact that last time they interacted was the feud of Harlem Heat.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't seen Stevie Ray in months. Even commentary knows that.
We get Medeja coming out to the ring with a microphone. She says Big Papa Pump is the only real man in the WCW.
The WCW.
Okay, Brett. Steiner then comes in from the crowd with a wood baseball bat and attacks Booker and Stevie. Mostly Booker, though. I think Stevie takes one and bails to ringside.
Yeah.
And then he taunts Booker's wife. It's like, you want to be the real man, huh?
Everyone is kind of jumping on my bandwagon of, like, Scott Steiner's kind of gross in this era.
Oh, yeah.
LaVestia's doing fine. She doesn't need that. She doesn't need that heat.
Not the worst offer a wife of Booker's has gotten from another wrestler.
Yeah.
I forget exactly what year it is, but Kurt Angle has a line with Charmel that I know they were going for animalistic, but Kurt says he wants to have bestiality sex with Booker's wife.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I think they were going for, like, aggressive, animalistic. It's like, nope, they picked the wrong
word. Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, no.
It wasn't even, like, a fun Kurt Angle, and you're a boy, and I'm a man who loves to play. Like, no, this was aggressive right to camera.
I wonder if he was trying to say, like, beastly.
Yeah, like, something like that.
Yeah.
That said, this segment, I actually thought it was effective. It lets Booker have his moment, his brother gets to come out, it's all nice. I wrote
now
that
you
I'm
have
like,
a villain.
Well, I'm like, yeah, it sets up his first opponent.
Yeah.
That's not the case, but.
Well, it gives him a villain.
Yeah, and doubles down that Steiner is, in fact, a heel.
Yeah. And Medeja gets to talk.
I know, yeah, that's rare.
Yeah, it is rare.
So we'll get a lot more of both these men later, so.
Oh my God, yeah.
Including our next segment, because backstage, Booker tells Stevie to get his wife out of here. Like, I'll handle it myself, and yeah, that just.
That's the end of that.
I mean, fair. I don't know what I expected to come back around, but it just does not come back around.
No, I mean, I think it's because we've seen so many segments at this point of women getting whisked away and then being used as, like, plot points later on in that episode. And that just didn't happen here.
You know what? I just remember this. We re-listened to the first Russo Nitro recently, and I mentioned the anti-Chekhov's gun, where it's like, this clearly seems to be setting something up. Nope.
Yeah, that's true.
Never came back around. We then get Pamela Paulshock backstage with Jeff Jarrett. Jarrett notes that last night the cat threw him a curveball. No.
What?
No, he did not. He says he wants his rematch tonight, but Pumpkins tells him that Booker already has a match. And we don't actually know what that match is here. It was like, oh, he has a match?
He's just booked in something.
Yeah, he's facing Mike Awesome later.
Yeah.
So Jarrett demands to talk to the cat, and Steiner comes in and just attacks Jeff. And then, like, knocks over the whole interview set while yelling.
Yeah, and we don't really understand, like, what instigated this or why Steiner just attacked Jarrett. Like, Jarrett was not calling Steiner out or anything of that nature. It's just like, you're a human. Fight.
Yeah, rah. I think just Steiner is large, out of control, man.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I gotta admire the range on him. I don't know how he manages to get into the psyche of that character.
Yeah, I don't know. That's really difficult for him to just come into a room and attack a man with no psychology behind it. Yeah, difficult.
Let's go to Shane Douglas and Tori Wilson coming out to the ring with a mic. Douglas says Bagwell got his ass franchised. And then brags about having Tori. Douglas references them being together in the Revolution. And I'm
so he claimed that this relationship started back in the Revolution. When she was like all over Billy, wasn't she?
Yeah,
this is a straw that he is grasping pretty hard for.
Yeah, but, like, also, Kidman was not part of the Revolution. He was with the Filthy Animals.
And there was never anything,
like... they feuded a bit. Is that what... I don't...
Because at the time of Shane being in the Revolution, he would have been in the cast, too. So, like, they were both ringside? So they flirted during the matches? That's the best I can get.
Yeah, because before Kidman, she was with David Flair.
Yes.
So, yeah, I don't know. Tori says that Billy Kidman has a small dick, and now she's been franchised. And I'm like, is franchise the new Space Mountain?
I mean, maybe, because it...
It's very unclear about what it means all the time.
It implies that you got fucked.
Yeah, because somehow both Buff Bagwell and Tori Wilson have been franchised, whatever that means.
And so if it implies, like, oh, yeah, if you got franchised means you got fucked, it works in both of those scenarios.
Scott Hudson had a weird line of here during her promo of like, oh my God, her voice. It's like nails on a chalkboard. I'm like, what, a woman?
A female voice.
Well, he's also the one, remember, he's not allowed to help any woman in need or his wife will be mad at him.
Oh yeah, I forgot that was Scott Hudson.
So there is a match here, apparently. It's going to be Shane Douglas with Tori versus Crowbar with Daphne.
I'm not entirely sure why these two are fighting.
I don't know. Crowbar comes out with a big lead pipe, and they trade pin attempts early while the pipe just lays in the ring. This is where we get Tony mentioning for the first time that we are not on next Monday, we are on Tuesday. Tell your friends.
Tell your friends.
Tell your friends.
Tell your friends.
Crowbar dives the floor and grabs a chair. Tori gets in between them as I notice the lens hood again, and I'm like, God damn it, guys.
See, now that you've pointed out to yourself, you're never going to not see it. Even though you pointed out to me, I never see it.
Douglas uses the distraction to gain the advantage. This is where Tony actually announces that Booker will be defending against Mike Awesome later on. Douglas hits a chain of suplexes as Daphne screams. Crowbar counters a third and hits a Northern Lights suplex. Tori trips Crowbar and then Douglas is vaulted to the floor almost on top of her. It was like, oh shit, that was close.
Mm. The women are getting very involved tonight.
Crowbar drops Douglas on the barricade and Tori grabs his hair, but Daphne grabs Tori's hair. And Scott Hudson, I guess, learned something, but also didn't learn something. Because he's like, oh, she better be careful not to pull out the extensions. Like, what?
So you agree, they're extensions.
Yeah. But he's acting like that's a big permanent install. I don't know.
I mean, even if it's just tape and extensions, that still fucking hurts. It's like the whole thing of like, oh, I hope you don't break a nail, like being very feminine and whatever. Breaking your nail fucking hurts. Getting hair ripped out of your head hurts. Yes, it's feminine, whatever, but that shit still hurts.
Daphne slaps the franchise, and Crowbar hits a slingshot guillotine leg drop, and then a lion salt. Shane Douglas hits his jumping jawbreaker, a.k.a. the franchiser, for the win.
Was that never named before? The franchiser?
I don't think he won with that besides last night, and we kind of noted, oh, that kind of looks like shit.
Yeah,
and
it did.
It does. Buff Bagwell then runs out, does a few moves on Douglas before celebrating.
Woo.
Like, why didn't you come down and try to cost him during the match?
Yeah, good question.
Like, clearly we can outside interfere again.
Yeah, I guess that's a thing now.
Match-wise, this was fine.
It was fine. It was effective, but, like, it didn't feel necessary.
But, hey, the interference was at least clear this week as opposed to Bash the Beach.
Fair, yeah.
We go backstage. Pamela asks Kidman about Tori, and Kidman calls Tori a skank and a money-hungry gold digger.
And then claims that she was his sloppy seconds.
I'm more focused on my career right now.
Sure, sure, bud. Sounds like you just got dumped and you're coming up with any excuse to be okay with it.
Jeff Jarrett then just pushes him out of the interview. I'm like, Jesus.
We get it. He's a heel.
Well, he steals the interview, and I was like, Kidman has to come back, or oh my God, that makes him look like such a little bitch. And he does, because Jarrett wants a title shot tonight. Kidman hits it from behind, and the two just kind of brawl. And then we get Smooth, Tank Abbott, and Three Count arriving with a gold record.
They're all dressed to the nines in these, like, three-piece suits. Or are these tuxedos? I don't really know the difference.
One of them is dressed to the four and a halves, if the rest of them are dressed to the nines. It's basically tuxes, but one of them is not quite like the others.
They look great.
Well, are you including Tank in that?
No. I'm including Three Count.
Yeah, Three Count come out in, like, full tuxes. Tank comes out in the tux top and then basketball shorts.
It does feel pretty on brand for Tank Abbott, though.
We then get Jeff Jarrett coming into the Cat's office. He wants a title shot. The Cat then instead books Jarrett versus Kidman later on.
For sure, why not?
We then get Three Count and Tank Abbott coming out to the ring, and for some reason, there's a painter's ladder set up. We did not know the context going into this.
No, because they really don't make it clear what's happening. So Three Count come out to the ring holding their gold record, because apparently their Three Count song has gone gold.
Yes.
Not platinum?
Tony Schiavone's like, you can get a gimmick one at any store. And I'm like, okay.
Don't, like, call yourself out. You were probably the one that went to Party City, Tony.
Apparently there are some calls for him to be, like, no longer be the commentator, but he just has so much political power that's like, no.
He's, really? People are complaining about him?
Yeah.
That's funny.
I mean, he openly doesn't give a shit.
That's
why they got rid of Bobby Heenan, because he started openly not giving a shit.
The showrunners openly don't give a shit. No one gives a shit about this show right now. Nobody in the production world gives a shit. Just because Tony Schiavone is speaking a little louder doesn't mean that the rest aren't true. Anyway, so they come out with the gold record. One of them climbs the ladder to, like, hang it on this hook in the middle of the ring. It's
Evan Courageous.
Okay. So Evan Courageous goes and hangs it up. It feels like they're setting it up for a record on a pole match, essentially, or, like, record ladder match.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, we're going to hang it up so everyone can admire it all night.
Yeah, it was a very strange premise.
Tank Abbott also says that they're the best band in rock and roll history, and I'm like,
they're not rock and roll.
Yeah.
I know that the definition of rock and roll is getting a lot more loose, especially with, like, the induction of people into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but this is pop. This is not rock and roll.
So Courageous hangs up the record, and then the Young Dragons come in and attack everyone from behind. Courageous is tipped off the ladder and, like, ooh, landed a little rough there.
Yeah, I didn't actually see how he landed.
The Young Dragons hit Morin Helms with the ladder, as Tank Abbott just kind of pauses on the apron to wait for his spot. Like, it wouldn't be as bad if he wasn't directly in the center of the hard camera. Well, his spot is knocking out two of the dragons, and then is going to knock out the third one, but he's interrupted by the great Muta.
Yeah, tell me why.
I think my note is why?
Same. Muta, why?
Muta spits mist at Tank, and then Kaz steals the gold record, and they head to the back, and so the great Muta is paired with the Young Dragons.
Sure. I guess cool that Muta's here, but also why the fuck is Muta here?
Yeah, he's apparently also in a very weird stage of his career where he's getting older and hasn't learned to change his style yet. Mm. I mean, I can't say I've seen a ton of him, but apparently he wins, like, Wrestler of the Year in 2001.
Oh, what?
And, like, over in Japan, but...
No.
But, yeah, apparently here, don't expect a ton.
Okay.
That said, not the first time we've seen him on the podcast.
No, we've definitely seen him before.
Well, we still saw him get inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame at WrestleMania 40, 39.
We didn't see him wrestle?
No.
Damn. I really thought we did. I mean, all of the random older stuff we've gone back to, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, if Muta showed up in, like, a Heroes of Wrestling, I would have, that wouldn't have felt out of place.
No, he was too good for that.
Well.
No, he apparently hasn't wrestled in the U.S. in a long while. So, yeah, I don't know that we've seen him anything. Backstage, Pamela is with Positively Canyon. He's notably pissed because he beat Booker like 90 minutes before Booker won the world title. He's like, why am I not the number one contender?
Valid. That's actually a valid frustration.
He does actually say, before Booker became the one time WWE champion.
Canyon just gets it, man. Canyon's so good.
Canyon says he's going to make the cat feel the bang. And then we see Goldberg arriving at the arena. I did not note his fanny pack at this point, but he is rocking a fanny pack.
Goldberg's?
Yeah.
Oh, what did I say he looked like? He looked very Jock Jams. Goldberg just like looks like Jock Jams embodied. I don't know. Like he's going to get into a basketball match with a bunch of animated bunnies. I don't know.
That's Space Jam, but go off.
Jock Jams. That's a Jock Jam.
He looks like one of the Monstars.
Yeah.
Fucking Bill Goldberg up on Moron Mountain.
More like Ghostberg.
But let's go to... God, what? It's our second match. It feels like we've been further into the show. It is Jeff Jarrett versus Billy Kidman. A match on paper, I'm like, okay. This is something.
Same. I was kind of having that same thing. I'm like, okay, maybe this will be semi-good in-ring work. And I'm not wrong.
Kidman hits a head scissors, but is hip tossed over the ropes to the floor. He loves taking that spot, and I don't know why. Jarrett throws Kidman around ringside and works the crowd into a Jarrett sucks chant. Like, crowd actually has a lot of life, including a weird moment later where they, like, preempt a heel turn.
Oh. They are very loud, though. With everything that's going on backstage and with the show that was last night, the crowd is a lot more alive than they have any right to be.
Kidman hits a dropkick and goes up top for a diving crossbody, but Jarrett rolls through and then... they very awkwardly transition into a sky high from Kidman, and Kidman clotheslines Jarrett to the floor. We then get Tori Wilson coming out, and the lens hood is fucked up. Tori goes to slap Kidman, but he catches her hand.
You gotta not note that every single time, because you're going to note it every time.
I watched this in two sittings. I think this is the first occasion of the second sitting.
Oh, okay.
But Tori Wilson goes to slap Kidman. He catches her hand. So Shane Douglas attacks Kidman from behind, but Kidman fights him off until a Tori low blow, and then Shane hits a DDT on the floor. Kidman's thrown back in the ring. The ref has been solely looking at Jarrett through all this, just to an awkward degree. It was different when he was on the floor, but now he's in the ring, and it's just like, hey, bud.
Hello.
Looking at you.
Here's looking at you, Jarrett.
Kidman kicks out and then rolls out of a suplex for a two. Jarrett goes for a powerbomb, but like doesn't fully get Kidman up, so the resulting face jam
is just... bad.
Yeah.
It's a rough face buster. Stop calling it a face jam. It is really like difficult to look at, because like that move can be so good and so clean and look powerful. This looked like an accident waiting to happen.
They do make up for it a little bit, because the finish is Kidman goes for Kidman faction, but Jarrett lands on his feet and turns it quickly into a stroke and gets the win. It was like, okay.
Yeah, it was a good... honestly, this was still a good match. Even with that one botch and the stupid storyline shit, this was a good match.
It was. It was a little clunky for these two. It was, I think just because I hold these two to a higher standard, I was like, oh, that wasn't as smooth in a lot of points.
Yeah, maybe. But it was still like good in-ring work from both men.
I think both these men are on the short list for best in-ring work in the bitsies later. Let's go backstage. Scott Steiner is just beating the hell out of Canyon. I'm like, oh, okay. He's just still on a rampage.
Yeah, what the fuck is going on with Scott Steiner? Just roidy rampage?
Yeah, pretty much.
Good lord.
Elsewhere, Mike Awesome is chatting up Nitro Girl Beef, Rhonda Singh.
Beef?
That's what they called her.
Beef?
Yeah.
They named Rhonda Singh Beef?
I don't know when the fuck... I knew this happened, but I'm like, she's already Nitro Girl, so I don't know what fucking show this was airing on to where...
Beef?
Yep. Do you need a minute?
That's so mean, it's funny. Beef?
Where's the beef?
She's right here. Oh my god. That's so mean.
But yeah, it's Mike Awesome. Later on, Mark Madden will actually coin the phrase, the fat chick thriller.
Does he actually say that on commentary?
Yep.
Oh, God.
The cat then comes up and offers Mike Awesome the U.S. title. It's like, well, you know, yeah, you were in the match last night that I stripped Steiner of the belt in, so here's your free belt. And Mike Awesome goes, thanks, but no thanks. It's like, if I'm going to hold the title, I want to actually, like, win and earn it. It was like, oh, wait, what?
I respect that.
Yeah, like, weird little pseudo face turn here for Mike Awesome. And
It's pseudo. I mean, the face turn, you saw this as coming out of nowhere. This has been on its way. With, like, I think that him flirting with the screaming memes, Jesus, that is a face turn in itself.
Yeah, but I feel like that's a 2024 face turn thing, not a...
He's being nice to women. That should be a face turn regardless.
But it's only to sleep with them.
Yeah, that's timeless, unfortunately.
But Mike Awesome is in our next match. It's Mike Awesome versus Booker T for the WCW title.
So this was inherently confusing, and you cannot tell me that I'm wrong. Because the cat is a mumbler. We know this. He mumbles. He's very difficult to follow. So in that last segment, he came up and just presented a belt to Mike Awesome. He says what it is, but you really have to be listening. They don't repeat it.
It's also like weirdly folded up and like almost not showing the camera.
It's not obvious what the belt is. So having that whole segment of like, oh, if I want a belt, I want to earn it. And then him going into a match right after that segment for a belt, I just assumed it was for the belt that we were just talking about. So when Booker comes out and there's a different belt, I'm like, I'm confused. And you're like, why are you confused? This is so clear. Like, it's not clear. It was never clear. Don't gaslight me into clarity.
No, I'm going to formally request that you listen on a higher volume just because of the cat. Because as someone who watched this separate and watched a little bit with you, I'm like, okay, I watched it earlier. I know what he said.
You watched it separate with headphones in.
Yeah.
That's the difference. I was watching it on a television. You were watching it with headphones. It's easier to decipher the mumbles with headphones. But you know what we didn't have in the year 2000 when we were watching this show? Headphones. Everybody was watching this on a television. So everybody watching this would have been just as confused as I was.
They didn't have subtitles. They can have the one with like the super long cable for the headphones.
No. I'm getting the authentic experience.
But yeah, Mike Awesome versus Booker T. At his Awesome's coming out, Tony plugs, hey, tickets for New Blood Rising are going on sale. And I think it's in like Vancouver or something like that.
You know the New Blood, which is totally still a thing.
Yeah, and you can meet Bret Hart at the box office. I'm like, oh.
Why?
Canada.
Why at the box office?
Like, oh, well, you're not going to wrestle. We're going to put you to work.
Seriously. It sounds like it. Like, oh, he's just going to be tearing tickets.
Booker, during his entrance, just has a massive smile for the whole thing. Like, he's living large.
He's very happy with where he is right now, and you can see it in his demeanor. And the crowd is, like, all for it, too. The crowd is hot for him.
Yeah, including him slapping Awesome to start that the camera just totally misses.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
That's why Awesome comes in so hot. It's because Booker slaps him. Like, oh, well.
Okay.
Booker chain wrestles, but is beat down by Awesome strikes. Booker hits a spin kick, and Awesome bails to the floor, and the crowd is hot here. Booker ducks a clothesline, hits a Harlem sidekick in a 10-punch spot. Awesome ducks a sidekick and clotheslines Booker. They go to the floor, and Awesome grabs a chair, but the chair's already broken.
Oh, was it already broken?
Oh, he goes to, like, lift it up, and the seat just, like, goes, like, partially flying.
Oh, jeez.
And he's like, let me gingerly hold this together and hit him once because I've already set up that I'm going to do this.
I missed it was already broken.
He grabs a second one almost immediately. That said, it's starting to really hit me how many matches just randomly have a chair shot or two.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they usually don't even add anything. It's just like, oh, well, like, they'll do that or a low blow or just something to, like, let you know, yeah, there's no fucking DQs anymore.
It was a lot of Hogan matches, though.
It was, but like, there's plenty of other ones that they just go over and it's like, yep, just like one or two chair shots.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're not wrong, but it felt more Hogan-y. So, I don't know, maybe a lesson
while
he's gone?
Don't forget that Mike Awesome and Hogan are loosely related.
Oh, remind me how.
Oh, it's like, the dead brother's son, brother's
dead
brother's
son, brother's
son,
brother's son?
Yeah, something
like
that.
Y'all got that?
I think in reality what it is, I think he's like an in-law with, like, closer to Horace Hogan. I forget exactly what it is.
Okay.
Or is he a cousin? I don't know.
Who cares?
It's enough for him to blame Russo and Hogan's feud on some of his bad booking later, but I'm like, no one really thinks about the fact that you two are related.
No, literally never. If it's a thing backstage, that's different.
So Awesome works Booker over with a different chair around ringside. Awesome hits his vaulting splash back in the ring and taunts the crowd. Get an Alabama slam to Booker, and Awesome goes up for a diving splash and hits it for only a two. Tony then asks, will Booker have the shortest reign in WCW history? And I'm like, nope. He actually left the show he wanted in, so I'm going to say no, because we've seen multiple occasions of someone winning and losing it in the same show,
mm-hmm.
including in the last, like, 2 months, it's happened, like, two or three times.
With who?
Nash and Flair both, like, got the title at the start of the show via, like, a segment and then lost in the main event.
Oh, I've forgotten about those.
So did Tony Schiavone.
Clearly, yeah. We're on the same wavelength.
Honestly, I half forgot. The one I was thinking of is when DDP loses it to Sting and then wins it back from Sting in the same night, which is, like,
oh, yeah.
May of 99.
I do vaguely remember that. That was a long time ago.
Awesome grabs a table and sets it up at ringside and tries for an awesome bomb to the floor through the table. And I'm like, that is not Masato Tanaka. He's not taking that bump. Booker slips out and knocks Awesome off the apron with a flying forearm, sending him crashing through the table. Awesome is back in the ring at 9. Weird occurrence of them actually enforcing the countout rule.
Yeah, that's true.
He hits a scissor kick and a Harlem sidekick. Booker hits a spinebuster, then goes up top for the missile dropkick, but only gets a 2. Booker then like ducks a clothesline, hits the bookend, and wins.
I mean, shocker. Booker retains.
Post-match, Scott Steiner attacks Booker and puts him in the Steiner recliner. Mike Awesome hits Steiner to break up the hold, so I'm like, yeah, I guess that's a face turn.
Yeah, so now this is very clearly like this match was kind of face versus face.
Yeah, it's kind of a mix.
I mean, it's implied that he was always a face because he supposedly turned so quickly, but like it's more just like a battle of skill, I guess.
Yeah, I think to really like lock in, yes, he's a good guy now. He and Booker kind of share a little knowing nod of like, good match, thanks for the save. I really like this match. I mean, shocker.
Yeah, this is right up your alley. Yeah. It was fine. I mean, it was nothing that stuck out to me. It was, you know, Booker is a good worker. I don't know. He's going to put on a good match. It was fine.
I do actually have a criticism of Booker T lately. He needs to spread out his big moves more. I feel like the end of his matches recently has been, let me do my 6 big moves like all in a row. And I'm like, no, spread them out and get some near falls. Like, it feels like you're just...
Yeah,
like that's like one little criticism of it.
Yeah, because he went from spinaroonie right to scissor kick immediately, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he hits, like I said, his 5 big moves. Mm-hmm. And then I had to like know, like, yeah, like there's kind of a clothesline moment that he ducks and then hits the bookend for the win. But it just felt almost too decisive at the end. And it doesn't seem like that's what they're going for. It seems like they're going for a hard-fought back-and-forth match. And I'm like, no, he kind of just hit all his big moves at the end and won.
Yeah. No, you're not wrong.
Like, frankly, Jarrett interfered, but he did, like, the same thing to Canyon the night before.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm not going to, like, yuck your yum. This was a good match. It was just, like, I need to get out of the mindset of, oh, it's fucking Mike Awesome. Tune out a little bit. Because I do have that mindset of, like, it's this wrestler. I don't care. Tune out. Because that shouldn't be the case.
Yeah. You're doing that with his good gimmick.
Is it a good gimmick? What's his gimmick?
The career killer.
They're not really leaning into that. They haven't leaned into that in a minute.
They kept saying it.
Yeah, they kept saying it. That is not leaning into it.
They actually referenced during this match, oh yeah, like a couple months ago, Awesome took Booker out for like 3 weeks. It was like, I remember at the time we were like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
This is your big return? It feels like you haven't been gone.
It's the same issue I have with like Chronic. They keep telling us what Chronic means, but they never, like, Rob Van Dam, you don't need to ask what his gimmick is. Like, you know who he is. You know he's a smoker, but he doesn't come out and say it straight up. With Chronic and with Mike Awesome, it's more like tell, don't show. They're just telling us what the gimmick is as opposed to like backing it up with anything going on in the ring or even in like a backstage segment or something.
Well, I think part of the problem is that part of the career killer thing was based on taking out Canyon, who I faked it, but I also was in the hospital, but I faked it. But
yeah,
it got, yeah.
Exactly.
I think that unintentionally hurt Mike Awesome a little bit. Backstage, see the cat headed towards the ring to deal with Scott Steiner. And then back commercial, he's already in the ring, like waiting for his cue. The cat calls out Scott Steiner and like tells him to knock it off. Like, no, stop. You can't do whatever you want to do all the time.
Yes. And you have to respect me because I'm the commissioner.
Steiner tells the cat that he has 3 seconds to give him a world title shot or I'll shove this mic right up your ass.
Got him.
He did like a little pause. Like he was trying to think of something more clever and then just went, eh.
He just couldn't think of anything.
Yeah.
Just like, up your ass.
Well, the cat, out of fucking nowhere, it's like, listen here, you're a stupid bitch, and I'm going to do something no one else will do. I'm going to whoop your ass myself. I'm like, I'm sorry, what?
Pardon?
And he punches Scott Steiner right in the fucking face.
Like, legit punches him. His sunglasses go flying. There and is contact
Steiner's,
made.
Like, holding his eye at the end of the segment, too. I'm like,
what? I think even he is like, holy shit, you fucking hit me. Okay, game on, motherfucker.
I'm like, cat face turn, or at least tweener turn?
No, this is not a face turn for the cat.
I don't know.
No.
I think
maybe, you will not convince me that this is a face turn for the cat.
I think it's meant to be at least a little vague. The other thing is, he keeps getting into it with Jeff Jarrett, who's another heel. So I'm like, are we kind of supposed to be rooting for him?
No. The cat is just a douchebag. He's an overpowered douchebag. He is just a dick who's not getting what he wants. This is not him face turning. This is just him being a whiny little bitch.
Steiner then chokes the cat, so Booker comes out for the save. Canyon then attacks Booker, and then Jeff Jarrett comes out as well. Everyone brawls until the Cat comes in and books a number one contender's three-way dance match.
Cool.
Goldberg's music then hits, and he's rocking the fanny pack.
Josh Jams.
Goldberg wants a four-way match instead, and the Cat makes it happen and ends with the line, "Now I have spoken."
Is that your catchphrase?
I think it's pretty good. I think it's going for like a ripoff of what Foley's doing around this time, because he would go, "And that is final."
Oh, because he was like a commissioner, wasn't he?
Yes, I think he still is at this point in time. So we have an all-heel four-way match for the main event.
Sick.
Except based on a little bit here and a lot later, no one told Goldberg that it's four heels.
Oh, really?
Goldberg's acted a little facey in this segment.
Goldberg doesn't know how to be a heel. No. We've gone over this. He does not know how to heel.
Bring in Jim Duggan. He's still got one kidney.
He has nothing. Yeah. Kick him where the kidney once was. No, Goldberg does not know how to be anything other than a face. And, like, that's maybe a fault in his training and his, you know, career. But he shouldn't need to know anything other than being a face, because he's a fucking face. Stop trying to make him a heel.
We then go backstage. Norman Smiley is training Ralphus. I think they say this was earlier in the night. It's not going great. Ralphus
like conditioning,
is yeah, like struggling to go up and down the stairs, do any sort of push-ups. Which brings us to Vito versus Norman Smiley and Ralphus. Norman calls out Vito and promises to do the big wiggle after he wins. Vito comes out and canes Norman as they brawl, like, arbitrarily to the back just to say, yep, we went back there. It's fine.
Why are we still sticking to that rule?
Well, because I think brawl's, like, just behind the screen, like, yeah, nowhere else.
Literally, because it's just, like, okay, let's just get a point that no one can deny is backstage, and then we'll go back to the fucking ring.
Sorry, that's a lie, because they brawl to a roll-up door, and I don't know what the fuck this was, but they, like, fully break this fucking door. Like, Vito crashes, like, all the way through.
Yeah.
This thing just breaks.
Oh, it's kind of funny. It's also kind of sad.
They go back towards the ring. We see Ralphus hiding under a table. Vito takes out Norman, hits Ralphus with a crutch in the ring.
Commentary just keeps making the note of, like, he's too fat to hide behind that table. Like, that's the whole point of the joke. It's not even a joke. They just keep repeating the same shit.
Vito then shoves a traffic cone under Ralphus and, like, fully swings a baseball bat
under Ralphus's crotch. Like, he's in the corner, legs splayed.
Yeah.
And the traffic cone is between his legs.
Yeah, I think someone refers to it as a traffic cone enema.
Yes, they do. They do refer to it.
That's a fucking dangerous spot, though. Because if you, like, just don't swing the baseball bat right, he fully fucking swung that thing.
Yeah.
And I couldn't tell if it was shoot or kayfabe selling from Ralphus after that.
It might have been a combination, because, like, there's no way that didn't hurt.
Yeah. Vito lays Ralphus on the table, hits a diving splash again. Luckily, the table was actually horizontal and not diagonal this time. They mess up the timing a bit on the finish, because Vito, like, half goes to pin Ralphus and then stops. Norman hits Vito with a chair, and he falls onto Ralphus. So Vito falls into a win as Norman is dancing.
Yeah, because, like, Norman thinks that he got Vito in that moment. I'm like, yeah. I win, basically. And It's like almost a fake out win.
So Vito chases off Norman with a kendo stick. His commentary notes, like, no, he hasn't beat Norman. He beat Ralphus twice.
Mm-hmm.
And Emily, I could be mistaken.
No,
it's really hard with him.
No, don't say it.
I think this is the final appearance of Ralphus. He'll appear on a Thunder to the next Thunder, the one after, but I can't find any record of Ralphus appearing after this. Because he's a manager, it's really hard to say, but he doesn't have any more matches outside of the one on Thunder, but I think this is it for Ralphus. Aww. Ralphus, who I believe won best gimmick last Bitsies.
Did he really?
I think we gave him best gimmick. Ralphus. Oh, man. Yes, because I called him set dressing and you got mad at me.
Yeah, because how dare you? That's so disrespectful to Ralphus.
I think you'll be able to convey my thoughts on Ralphus as well, but do you want to say a little farewell to Ralphus?
Ralphus was such a breath of fresh air anytime that he was on screen, from the first iteration to this. He's just fun. He's just what you need in, like, a hard moment. Ralphus brings a little bit of levity, and he's just so much fun to watch. He understands what his place and his character is.
I don't know if he does, but that's the beauty of it.
And yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe it's just, like, a little, an ounce of innocence, even. of just like, Ralphus, you don't even know where you are, but you're bringing me so much joy.
Like, apparently he tried to, like, negotiate for, like, a whole big contract, and they're like, no, bud, no.
Buddy, no. Get back in the truck.
Unfortunately, he never really got to get his flowers after the fact. He passed away in 2019, but, like, he never, like, went to any sort of, like, wrestling conventions or signings. No, he just...
Ugh.
I think he just goes back to being a truck driver for WCW. I mean, I don't know. He just... He had no social media. He just kind of went off the grid.
I love him.
John Ryker.
John Ryker. Bless you, man.
But yeah, we will miss Ralphus.
Yes.
Do you still have your Jericho Personal Security shirt?
I have yours too.
I feel like in hindsight we should have worn that in honor.
I didn't realize this was the last time.
So I know we're not done with Norman Smiley, so we will get more of him. But
no, see, that's not the one that I want more of.
All right, well, we like Norman.
He's fine.
But... Yeah, Ralphus, unfortunately. Hey, he did the time-honored tradition. He went out on his back.
Bless him.
We then get the cat walking through backstage. He's attacked by the Young Dragons, but he fights them off.
God, are we doing this again? Can we leave this at Bash of the Beach? This is a stupid storyline at Bash of the Beach. This is a stupid storyline here.
Emily, I'd like you to take us through our next segment.
I'm honestly not sure that I can. So, we're backstage. We're with Paisley. She's doing something for the artist. She has, like, a shirt or something.
Yeah, she's in, like, advocating the costume for him in some department. Way.
And she, like, is talking to, some costumer. And she looks behind him, and there's this person, this blonde person in a shiny, frilly shirt. Very flamboyant. Like getting slippers. Fitted or something.
I don't even know.
And he, like, introduces himself as Kiwi. And... Paisley is just taken by Kiwi. Like, her flabbers are gasted. She is so, like, oh my heavens, oh my stars, for fucking Kiwi. And,
Yeah, they're definitely going for a he's gay gimmick. Like, he has the full hands on the hip, effeminate.
But Paisley is supposed to be, like, infatuated by him.
She's also infatuated by the artist. She has a weird type.
Yeah. At least you can't deny that the artist is straight, though.
Yeah.
Or at least enjoys women. Sometimes.
Yeah, it's the prince thing of just like, who knows?
Yeah, exactly. But he likes Paisley at least sexually somehow. I don't know. This was very strange. So now we got Kiwi in the mix, who is not Australian, though you might think so.
He'll apparently be on Thunder, so I'll have a
weather report on him.
Yeah.
Why does that not surprise me that this no-name named Kiwi is on Thunder?
And then we go from one... meant to be gay gimmick, right to Lenny Lane. That felt interesting.
It did. I had to remind myself if you had said that Lenny Lane was done.
I think I did. No, I think I said both of them were done because...
Liar.
Well, Lenny Lane is in the crowd with a sign that says, use me.
Yeah, and commentary tries to like put a storyline behind this of like, this guy has been on retainer, on contract, just sitting at home every week doing nothing. He wants to be put in a match.
Well, you say commentary does. Mark Madden does, and therefore I am not on his side. If Mark Madden's on your side, I'm like, I don't know. Lenny will have a match on an upcoming Thunder, and then that's literally it for him. So,
are you sure?
Yes.
You said last time. You are infamously terrible at these calendars.
I am correct on their final matches. Okay. Also, it got noted that they got released.
Yes, it did.
I was told he got released 3 times before he fucking is gone.
Welp.
Yeah, so I wouldn't make too much of this.
It is just, like, a weird sign. I don't know.
And speaking of a weird sign, we get Lance Storm coming out to the ring with a mic, who, thus far, has been a face teaming with Billy Kidman.
Has Lance Storm been a face?
He's been teaming with Billy, against the
has
Filthy
Billy
Animals.
Has Billy been a face?
Yeah. They've been feuding with the Filthy Animals, who are heels.
I haven't thought of Billy Kidman as a face in a very long time.
Billy randomly face turned and then had like the Authority mad at him. So Billy has been a face and Lance Storm's been teaming with him and fighting heels. So Lance Storm has been a face. He comes out to the ring and then just gets aggressive USA chants.
Because he's Canadian, obviously.
Yeah, but like the promo he's about to cut is why you should chant that. He hasn't cut the promo yet. I'm like, what the fuck were
they? He's just Canadian.
What were they told?
He's Canadian.
Well, Lance Storm says there won't be any sports entertainment antics tonight. He says, not dance.
He says I don't do sideshow antics. Yeah. He doesn't say sports entertainment. He says I don't do sideshow antics. I don't dance. I don't sing. I wrestle.
Yes. He does that best because he's Canadian, although he trips over that line a little bit.
A little bit.
He wants everyone to rise for the Canadian national anthem.
More people than I expected to do rise for this anthem in the audience.
Yeah, commentary just fucking talks over it the whole goddamn time. I was wondering if they were going to interrupt it, and I'm like, there's weird rules and regulations about that, because I think it was Finley got fired as a backstage producer for a little bit, because they had The Miz interrupt the U.S. national anthem on like a random house show.
I don't think I realized that was taboo.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense. We're way too fucking patriotic for our own damn good.
Now, the flag, I feel like you can just fuck up and do whatever you want to.
Which is strange, because that's the thing that's like literally written down, that you cannot deface the flag. There are more
Shawn
laws
Michaels
about
has
the flag.
Dry humped the Canadian flag.
I'm talking about the American flag. Yeah. I don't know about the Canadian flag, but like flag law for the American flag is way more strict than anthem law. I don't know anything
it's
about the anthem.
It's not flag law. It's flag code.
Sorry, flag code. You're right. You're actually right.
It's not law.
You're right. But I don't know if that transfers over to like other countries.
So some people are standing for the Canadian national anthem. We see a Blame Canada sign and Scott Hudson says Blame Anne Murray too while you're at it, which Mark Madden notes is a dated reference. I'm like, it's not that dated.
Who's Anne Murray?
It's a South Park reference.
Oh, I don't know it.
Yeah, Oscar nominated song Blame Canada.
I know the song Blame Canada.
Yeah, there's just a line in there in that bitch Anne Murray too.
Oh. I don't know it well enough, I guess. Yeah, I know Blame Canada. I know the song.
So his opponent is Proud American, the artist. The way he comes out, it's like, well, is he here to defend America?
I mean, maybe? No. This man is not a patriot. Or at least not his character is.
He's no Dale Wilkes.
Sure. He's no Dale Torborg.
You know, I just realized, like, what is it with Dales randomly having their gimmick name of the something and then also just being noted as their name?
What is Dale Wilkes?
The Patriot.
Oh.
He had Kurt Angle's theme before Kurt Angle.
Oh.
So anyway, a match. Storm hits a jawbreaker and a European uppercut. Paisley joins commentary just to talk about Kiwi for the most part.
But she also calls Lance Storm a Power Ranger reject, which did make me giggle.
She also goes like, I don't dance. I don't say, give me a break.
Give me a break. Spare me. That's what she said. Spare me is so devastating. I need to use that more in my language. Just like, spare me. Ugh. Ugh.
Artis hits a low blow and a knee strike. Artis then hits a back suplex, and he completely whiffs on a super kick at one point. I think it was just a bad camera angle, but it was like, oh, that wasn't great.
Maybe, yeah.
The crowd seems distracted, but, like, nothing happens during this, so I don't really know why.
There's probably something going on, like, in the audience.
Artis hits a belly-to-belly and goes for the Paisley plant, but is caught and hit with a Northern Lights suplex. When he's going for the Paisley plant, my first thought was, oh, you're going to need a new name for that soon, aren't you?
Is Paisley leaving?
Well, if she's going over to Kiwi, she is.
Well, who the fuck knows?
Yeah.
Thing is, you and I know nothing about Kiwi. I don't really have a lot of faith in him.
I've seen his name pop up in random spots, but I'm like, really? I know nothing about this man. I also swear I always read it as Kiwi and remember thinking Kiwi? That was weird. Yeah. I don't know. We'll have to keep an eye after that, but I swear it's like KW whatever. Lance Storm hits a dropkick, super kick, and a sit-out powerbomb. Storm then hits a springboard missile dropkick, but the artist hits a Samoan drop. Storm counters an Irish whip into his half Boston Crab and gets the win.
Wow.
Paisley's like, he cheated. How?
Because I said so.
Yeah. Wasn't the worst.
No, it was fine. It was not exciting.
There wasn't a lot of logic for the concept of the match. It just seemed like you combined, okay, well, we want to establish Lance Storm is now a Canadian heel, and we got to have Paisley talk about Kiwi. So
sure.
Two birds. I'm like, well, frankly, I know he just died, basically, but, like, you have Jim Duggan come out.
True.
Oh, speaking of people who died, Vampiro's driving up in a hearse.
Who died?
I don't know, because there's a coffin still in the back, and I'm like, wait, what?
Who did he rob?
Because he left the night in the coffin.
Vampiro did?
Yeah, because there was Sting attacked him and put him in the coffin.
Oh, I have more theories about Sting later, too, by the way.
Oh, and I do actually have a follow-up on the person who played Sting last night as well.
Okay.
We then get the Filthy Animals coming out to the ring to watch the upcoming title match. And, oh, Ray, what is your top? What is this fucking mesh tank top?
I was struggling to figure out who was actually in this match. I thought it was a triple threat kind of match, like a three-way tag match or something.
I think it doesn't help that the Filthy Animals occasionally just wrestle in weird clothes.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially Ray. I'm like, you're not wrestling? I'm like, oh, no, they're going to ringside.
Yeah.
So the actual match for the tag team titles, which I think was set up last week, it's MIA, which is the team of General Rection and Corporal Cajun, versus Chronic.
So I have a question that I have not double checked, and I might, I'm sorry if this is going to be another fucking Scott Norton moment. All of MIA comes down with the two people in the actual match. And then they leave. So Major Guns does her whole like tear the tank top thing. And then the rest of MIA leave. There was a guy standing next to Major Guns.
That was a blonde guy. It was Van Hammer. That was Major Stash. He just had a weird hat on or something.
Oh, okay. Are you sure?
Yes.
He wasn't wearing a hat.
I don't, it's him.
Okay.
Can I remember noting, hey, he's still here.
I was like, who the fuck is that guy? Maybe he just like hasn't been around.
He just hasn't been wrestling.
Okay, maybe it's that.
Yeah, he's just been in segments. I can't tell you last time he had a fucking match.
Like for a second, I was like, is that like Major Gunn's husband and he's there to like make sure that the men stay away from her? Like, is that her security or something? Because I could not place that guy.
So Emily, per my notes, that is Van Hammer. That is the last time you will see Van Hammer.
Son of a bitch.
I'm pretty sure he's released around this time.
The last time I see Van Hammer, I don't recognize him. Yeah. Cool.
Fucking Major Stash. Hope it was worth it.
It wasn't.
Yeah. I do know they get a new big heavy.
Oh, God.
And don't worry, they will also have a pun name.
Jesus Christ.
So in the match, Adams hits a full Nelson slam like almost immediately, and the Filthy Animals are just shitting on the match like 2 seconds in. I'm like, Jesus Christ, guys.
The Filthy Animals are not shitting on it.
Yeah, they are.
Ray says like a word. Hoovy does a lot of talking. Hoovy's very fucking annoying on commentary. Ray says like nothing.
Tony was also being annoying because Hoovy has the accent and Tony's going, what? What?
There was one line that Hoovy was saying that I could not understand either. I was on Tony's side for it. I can't remember what he was trying to say, but it was Mumble City and Hoovy was not enunciating whatever those words were. Damn, I can't remember what it was, but yeah, I was on Tony's side for that.
MIA hit a double team DDT and Cajun hits a swinging neck breaker. General Rection Adams are down on a double clothesline and as the Filthy Animals go to get involved. Mark Jindrak and Sean O'Hare randomly come through the crowd to stop them. Also, they're back in their like briefs attire, so that little flirting with the cargo pants didn't last.
I guess not.
I really thought that was going to be the finish of the match, but like that's like the halfway point.
Yeah, like Team No Name comes in to stop them and like nothing happens. Like then Hoovy and Ray are gone, right? They don't get back on commentary.
They're gone and Tigress is just sitting in commentary. She does not play into anything. No. They're just like, yep, yeah, you're here. It's kind of weird for you to leave now, so I guess just wait until the break.
You're stuck here now.
General Rection holds Adams for a missile dropkick and the MIA work over Adams. Rection goes up top and misses a diving elbow drop and Brian Clark tags in and cleans house. Mark Madden notes that he was injured last night and injured tonight, and I'm like, yeah, the way this match is going, I can tell, because you don't seem to want to take any bumps or do anything.
Yeah, I mean, last night was a big night.
Rection hits a spin kick and goes for no laughing matter and hits it, but Brian Adams breaks up the pin. Corporal Cajun hits shake, rattle, and roll and eats a tilt-a-whirl backbreaker. Brian Adams hits a gutbuster, and Brian Clark just walks in the ring to hit high times.
Yeah.
The referee just like holds up two fingers like, oh, there's two of them in now.
Yep, like, sure is.
No, what?
Hello? You need to tell one of them to leave.
So they hit high times, but Rection breaks up the pin. And then we get the finish of this match. And oh no.
Yeah.
So Chronic has a cool new move. It's a powerbomb diving clothesline combo. And I don't know what happens here between two things. I don't know if Corporal Cajun over-rotates or Brian Adams just slips backwards, but they just like all collectively crash into the corner.
Yeah.
And luckily, Cajun doesn't land too bad. I think he manages to land kind of flat back.
It doesn't look like anybody lands catastrophically. It just looked a little like, ugh.
Yeah, it just looks like, oh, that was not what meant to happen here. And that's the finish. So Chronic retain.
Yay.
As they're celebrating, and I'm really hoping you saw this, the perfect event are supposed to come in and attack Chronic from behind. They go to the wide shot. You can see Chuck Palumbo and Sean O'Hare bolting it across the crowd.
Oh, no.
Oh, it's fucking hysterical. Because we just watched the TNA episode where, like, Jeff Hardy and Rob Van Dam are, like, trying to, like, waiting for this mother to get out of the way. Like, they're basically doing that. Like, shit, get out of the way, guys. Come on.
Oh, God. No, I missed this entirely.
Right across the hard cap.
Oof.
And I'm like, just come down the ramp, guys. It's
yeah,
fine.
Why do we got to do these run-ins from the crowd?
So the perfect event eventually get in the ring. They attack Chronic with Lex Flexers. General Rection then sends the perfect event to the floor, and we're just kind of done with this mess.
It is that. It is a mess.
Yeah. It's trying to set up like, hey, look at all these teams that want the title, but I'm just like, eh.
Please make all these teams go away.
No one here is really able to work a coherent match against each other that I have interest in.
Exactly. Yeah, this was messy. Because this was essentially all of the tag teams were like part of this.
Yeah. And the way this match went early on, especially with Brian Clark not tagging in for a while, I'm like, is he hurt and you're trying to get the titles off of Chronic? Because the Misfits and Actions like dominate the first like quarter of this match. And I'm like, are they about to get like a squash win? What the fuck?
Yeah, I don't know. Nope. But, I mean, clearly not. I mean, that's how it ended. But yeah, I can see how you see that.
So I imagine the next few weeks are just going to be more of this kind of stuff until something at the pay-per-view.
Yep. How many weeks do we have to the pay-per-view?
I think this is a 4 or 5 week build.
Okay.
Luckily, we have an ECW break up next. So.
Oh, hell yeah.
But we have one segment and one match left before the Bitsies.
Woo!
Let's go to the segment. It's Vampiro coming out to the ring. The casket's already out at ringside. I'm like, oh, okay, I missed that. But when Vampiro's coming out, Tony Schiavone's like, we need to give a shout out to Bam Bam Bigelow for saving all those children from a house fire.
Yeah, you told the story last.
Yeah, I didn't know Tony mentioned it.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Vampiro cuts a very pouty promo, and then I think he says something about like the Dark Carnival has been, you know, unleashed. Whatever. He taps the casket at ringside, and out comes the demon.
Our bestie Dale.
The way they do it, like, was almost like they missed time that it was going to be a cool reveal, but it was like, nope, he just like sits up and gets out. Yeah. And Asia suddenly...
I think they wanted to do like an Undertaker sort of vibe, like, you know, sitting up out of the coffin. No, it didn't. That did not land.
Well, Asia's suddenly in the ring and they're like, all right, is she part of this? And Vampiro was like, I want you to beat her down like a dog and choke her. And I'm like, Jesus.
Yeah, she very like slowly, almost lazily comes into the match and is like, kind of trying to stop Dale, like, no, this isn't you, whatever, like, yeah. I'm your fiance. That doesn't really take, though. It doesn't really work, because she doesn't, like, put her whole heart into it or something.
Yeah, so the demon chokes her. Yeah. Then we get Sting's music hitting. Someone wearing all black and a ski mask comes out with a bat, hits a few bat shots and a few Stinger splashes.
Commentary, as soon as they hit the Stinger splashes, commentary is like, oh, well, that has to be Sting. That's him.
The way he moves actually makes this look like Sting.
The man's not tall enough to be Sting.
Is he not?
No. The nose is wrong and the height is wrong. This is not Sting.
I don't have a report on who this is. However, I did find out Chris Harris, who was Sting last night, in TNA, he does a segment where Jeff Jarrett's calling out people to come out dressed as Sting. He comes out as Sting there and looks pretty good.
Okay.
It was like, oh shit, he did it twice.
Yeah, no, I can pick out Sting at this point. Like, this is not Sting.
Yeah, the fact that they're like hiding so much of his face. And
but they're trying to like write it off as like, oh, he's burned and, you know, he's just, he's disfigured. Like,
I'm pretty sure I accidentally saw thumbnails from like September and he is just in full face paint. So
sure.
I expect no payoff of this.
Oh, I didn't expect payoff either. Like, it's just kind of what it is.
Do you remember, this would have been late 2020, early 2021, they had Alexa Bliss throw a fireball into Randy Orton's face,
yes.
And they actually gave him, like, burn makeup, like, twice, and then he went to the Royal Rumble, and was like, I'm fine. Like, they just completely, like, got rid of all of that.
I mean, do you remember the eye injury that Rey Mysterio would sustain during 2020? Yeah.
I mean, credit to Ray. He did actually wear masks that had the one eye covered for a while, and then they just stopped.
Stopped doing that. We just don't even talk about the fact that Seth Rollins, like, tried to fucking kill Rey Mysterio.
So in this segment, the heels bail, and it's like, is it Sting? It's totally Sting. It's great. I mean, like I said, if it's not Sting, whoever's moving moves like Sting. So they have him down pretty well.
No, and I agree. Like, the moveset that this guy was doing, whoever this guy is, yes, he does look like Sting from afar, but from where we were, what we were watching, this is not Sting. Usually the hair will give it away.
Yeah, I was under a ski mask, so you couldn't. But let's go to our main event for a number one contendership. It is a four-way match of Jeff Jarrett versus Kanyon versus Scott Steiner versus Goldberg.
Yay.
And I immediately am like, oh, it's the stupid four-way. And I also noted, yeah, the fact that it's four heels... The crowd wants to root for somebody, and they all pick Goldberg.
Yep, they sure do.
Steiner and Kanyon start. Steiner just beats the hell out of Kanyon. Get a big delayed press slam to him. They go to ringside. Steiner grabs a chair, hits Canyon across the back. Back inside, Steiner hits a spinning belly-to-belly, locks in the Steiner recliner. I'm like, isn't that banned?
Sure is.
Goldberg breaks it up, which is 90% of his offense in this match. Just kick to break up the pin.
Stab it. Yeah. Kick.
Because he also kicks Canyon for trying to pin Steiner after that. It's like, no. Canyon hits a sit-out Alabama slam. Goldberg breaks up the pin. Canyon signals for the diamond cutter, but Jeff Jarrett tags in. Steiner hits a tilt-a-whirl slam on Jarrett, but Goldberg breaks up that pin. Canyon tags in on Steiner, so Steiner T-bones him. I'm pretty sure Goldberg breaks up a pin there, too. Canyon wants the diamond cutter, but Jeff Jarrett counters and is tagged in by Goldberg. Canyon hits the Canyon cutter on Jarrett, but doesn't see Goldberg lining up for a spear. Goldberg hits the spear, does the big, I'm going to do the jackhammer, everyone cheers.
Woo!
Hits the jackhammer, Steiner breaks up the pin. They go nose to nose and brawl to the floor. For the record, Goldberg tagged in, but Jeff Jarrett, not the legal man, just pins Canyon. What?
Cool.
Made a whole deal of having to do the tags.
This was like the lamest ending.
I don't have that be the finish if you're going to do tags.
I agree.
I guess backwards. Don't do the tags if that's the finish.
Oh, no. I 100% agree. This is just like a lame finish. Like, obvious. Like, I don't know. I have such a hard time with this because this could have been really interesting. This could have set up a lot more storylines and a lot more intrigue moving forward. But fucking of course Jeff Jarrett's going to win. And of course it's in the most uninteresting way possible.
I was amazed Nash didn't get involved.
Nash wasn't here. Yeah. Yes.
I was convinced that it's like, oh yeah, we haven't seen him yet. He's going to come down and cost Goldberg and Steiner. Like, no, he just wasn't here tonight. Post-match, security separates Goldberg and Steiner, and we go off the air. Like, with how much they're establishing Steiner is the new uncontrollable heel, It's like, it definitely feels like they're going to be turning Goldberg back.
Yeah, I mean, it only makes sense for him to be a face. He's clearly not a good heel. And yeah. We know this at this point.
And this whole show just kind of felt like a weird reset.
It did feel like a reset. I felt the fingerprints of Russo on this a lot more strongly than I thought that I would. Like, this very much felt like a Russo show. Everything happened very quickly. The pace was really, like, fast. It was actually an easier watch.
We got to the main event and there were 6 minutes left.
Yeah. Actually had time to potentially do an intro.
Oh, I was saying that wasn't enough time.
Oh, honey, baby, sweetie. 6 minutes is plenty of time in WCW.
But thoughts on this overall show?
It really wasn't bad.
Yeah.
I found myself enjoying the show. Like, it was not a painful watch. It went pretty quickly. There was a point where we, like Nick said, we watched separately. But he stepped in while I was watching on my end. And he was just kind of talking about it. And I had to look at him. I was like, are you shit-talking the show? Because I'm kind of enjoying it. He's like, oh, no, I'm not trying to shit-talk. I'm just talking. Like, I also enjoyed this. I was like, this is weird. It's weird that we're both enjoying a Nitro.
Like, it feels a little messy, but it actually feels like it's trying to get to certain points and progress things.
Especially with where we just came from. That's a weird thing to say.
Yeah.
It's weird to say that this is, like, trying to get somewhere.
I think the fact that we didn't know if Russo was coming back and it was like a weird 3-week holding pattern.
Maybe, yeah.
The fact this had any direction is like, oh, hey, we're doing things.
True.
Unfortunately, I know the next pay-per-view is very bad, so we're not going anywhere good, but
we're getting there, though.
I think let's go into best bit, worst bit, and MVP before we get into the bitsies.
Let's do it.
So, Emily, what is your best bit for tonight's show?
So, as much as I said that I liked the show, it was kind of hard to come with a best bit. Everything was just kind of like mid-tier to me. Nothing was standout.
I have a problem with worst bit. My best bit, I came to pretty easy.
I gave it to Jeff Jarrett and Kidman.
Okay.
Like, it was a good match. It was two men that can go in the ring, and they were not bad. So, yeah. What'd you give it to?
I gave it to Mike Awesome versus Booker T. Yeah, especially, I think it's nice to give Booker a win. With how much the title was jumping around a little bit there, It's like, all right, let's cement you that, no, like, you are a good champion. You can beat people.
You can be a champion for a couple of days.
Yeah.
That's fair.
All right. So, Emily, what is your worst bit?
I gave it to the main event.
Yeah.
I did have an honorable mention that came through in this, like, while we're talking here. Honorable mention is Beef. That is so upsetting to me. That is incredibly upsetting. But I did give it to the main event because it was just like, this is the lamest way to get to where we got.
Yeah, it is kind of unfortunate. Like, yeah. Oh, it's just Jarrett again.
But I think if I had to pick, I think Beef is my worst bit.
Oh, Beef, okay. You got Beef with Beef?
Just the fact that her name is Beef. I can't do that. What's your first pick?
I gave it to the Vampiro and Demon segment. It was quick, but I'm just like, oh my god, I don't fucking care. Why are you ready? Vampiro went from, I don't want to hit a woman, to beat the shit out of her and choke her real quick.
He's not doing it.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah, I just, the spooky bullshit, I'm over.
It's Halloween.
Not in the timeline, it's not. It's fucking July.
It's Halloween.
And then Emily, who is your MVP?
I think there's only one answer.
Is it Booker T?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's raking him up lately.
I mean, yeah. This beginning promo was enough to be best bit and MVP, but MVP.
Yeah, and he's all over this fucking show. Mm-hmm.
He's everywhere. He's getting his payday. He is a working champion.
Yes. So with that, I think it's been 2 years. I think it's time for us to get into the Bitsies.
The Bitsies!
So I think let's establish which episodes like qualify for this, because it's not everything.
No, it's not every episode. And we should also establish the timeline, too, because this goes back a while.
Yes, yeah, so we are technically doing this from episode 61 through Bash of the Beach. So this one also doesn't qualify. It's Russo's first Nitro through when he leaves, the in-between period, and then him and Bischoff running things. So it's very much a three-act structure we have of qualifying materials here.
Honestly, going through all of this, I think that we need to implement another Bitsies for next year, like in the halfway point or something, because like, this is a lot of content to go back through. Granted, I did have a lot of fun going back through some of the like pay-per-views especially and listening back on what our opinions were. So there's that. But this is a lot of time that we recorded episode 61 before we got married.
I think technically last one would have had more episodes included in it.
Really?
It's vague because of just general timelines. Additionally, same as last time, the WrestleMania episodes do not count.
Sure.
The episode 100 stuff doesn't count, and the Patreon stuff does not count. This is
canonical
purely
timeline.
Yes.
Yeah.
Other housekeeping, we did not do all the same ones as last time. We shortened up a little bit just because, yeah. Like, best wrestling maneuver, it's like, eh.
Yeah, that wasn't necessary. And we're also not doing a quiz, right?
Correct.
Good.
Additionally, I created a little bit of a short list for some of these, but not all these. We'll mention some as we go. But I think let's start on a positive note. Emily, who has been the most underrated wrestler of the past 2 years?
Ooh. Okay, so there are a couple of people that like came to mind for this. Like, you did give me like a couple of options as well. Like, you gave me kind of a cheat sheet of like my best bits, your best bits, my worst bits, your worst bits, all that stuff too.
Yes.
So going through that, there were a couple of people that stuck out, particularly like Three Count. They were pretty high up my list. Chavo was on the short list as well, but I don't know about him so much. But I think that it has to go to Crowbar. Crowbar is so not just underrated, but underutilized. He is such a good wrestler, such a good commentator, such a good character. He is not given the praise that he deserves. So I think he is well deserving of the most underrated.
I'm going to go with Chavo. I think.
You think so?
I think he's been putting on better matches than Crowbar, and that puts it over the edge for me. Yeah, he's not a great promo, but Crowbar is not really a great promo either.
Yes,
they're all capable, but
I don't know. I think Crowbar's a better wrestler than Chavo, personally. Personally. I guess I have a hard time with Chavo because he's given more opportunity than Crowbar is.
I'd say they're about equal. I think that's why they're both kind of qualifying for this. I did kind of think about Canyon, but he's being used pretty frequently, and I think he is on screen too much to qualify for this.
I think if we had done a mid-year thing, Canyon would have been on that list. Yes. So I give mine to Crowbar. You give yours to Chavo Guerrero.
Yes.
Congratulations to people who are not listening and don't care.
Lieutenant Loco.
We'll talk about that later.
Let's go to most overrated. I did not do a short list because I felt like there was two obvious answers.
Oh, I think that will be different then.
Okay. Emily, who did you give most overrated to?
So I gave mine to a wrestler who I think is given too much opportunity, does nothing with it, and keeps getting pushed for some reason.
I would say the same for me, but I think we're going to have different ones.
I gave mine to David Flair.
Okay, I didn't go with that, but that's not a bad choice.
He is given too much opportunity for who he is, not for what talent that he has. And he doesn't do anything with it that is like worth noting. Granted, that being said, I did give him my like MVP a couple of times in this run. So like, that's a weird thing. But that being said, like, he still is He's such a nepo baby is what it is. Like, he's not doing anything with the position that he's being given.
I think there's a little recency bias there. I think minus...
I would say so too, but I listened back to like fucking Halloween Havoc and we were still saying shit about David Flair then.
Yeah, you gave him like...
Oh, I gave him MVP a couple of times, but overall, I've been fed up with him.
Yeah. I went with one Mr. Kevin Nash.
Oh, you think so?
Oh, I absolutely do. Mm. He has not made anybody else look good in the past 2 years. He actively buries the mid-card every time he interacts with them.
I guess that's valid. But you always get on my case for hating on Kevin Nash, especially like when with his in-ring work. Because I hate his in-ring work, and you're like, oh, well, he's just a big guy doing big guy stuff. Ah, I'm interested in that.
No, I think he's booked way beyond what he should, and he's being paid in such a way where you have to utilize him like that.
That's fair, yes.
The only thing he has is a little bit of charisma, and even lately he's been like, oh, I'm pretty fucking
sleepy.
See,
I think you're also falling into recency bias, especially with that.
Even before the, I mean...
No, I'm not going to
him and Scott Hall coming out drinking cough syrup every week.
Oh my God, the cough
him
syrup.
Him forming the NWO.
Bad.
I'm loosely recalling him having like amnesia, being like, Commissioner Gordon.
Was that in this run?
Yeah.
Oof, that was so long ago.
So yeah, I'm going with Kevin Nash. I want him to be done.
Okay.
So let's go into our next set. Let's go into best gimmick and worst gimmick. I did not have a short list for best gimmick because slim pickings.
That's the thing. The bests on these lists are really difficult. We are flush with options for the worst of all these things, but best is hard. And the thing is, we're also flush with options for gimmicks, but they're all fucking terrible.
Yeah.
They're all insultingly stupid.
Or, like, they're just fine. Like, Screamin' Norman. It's like, it's fine.
It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
What did you come up with for best gimmick?
So, I was actually between two, and it's for the exact same reason on both. You're probably not going to agree with me on this. And it is exactly for the gimmick itself. It's for the character. It is for the introduction. It is for everything around the character, not the in-ring work. Not the demon. Don't worry. I can see that look on your face. I gave it to the maestro.
Okay.
The maestro has incredible characterization that was not utilized properly. I think he had a really fun entrance, a really fun character. He had... I can never remember her name. Melody?
Symphony.
He had Symphony
Melody
with her.
Melody is the character from Little Mermaid 2. Every time you think it's Melody.
The maestro could have been something and they were too cowardly to do something with him. Do you remember when he was playing a piano on a like a suspended loft? Like, come on.
Yes.
Maestro.
You know what? I think that's a good answer.
Thank you. My honorable mention was Conan just for himself. Just for being Conan.
That's not a gimmick.
Feel that. That's enough.
Well, I guess I say that's just him, but I gave mine to just Terry Funk as the hardcore legend.
Okay, see, that's just who he is.
I think he slotted into that as a great kind of spot of like the unkillable hardcore legend who was willing to kind of teach people. It's like, just have Terry Funk be him, which I'd say isn't a gimmick, but then WWF had him be Chainsaw Charlie. So yeah, apparently it is a gimmick. But crazy old hardcore legend. Him waving a chicken at fucking Dustin Rhodes.
Oh, don't get me started on the fucking chicken. No. The chicken thing as a whole was the worst bit of Terry Funk. I think that is worst Terry Funk. That's also worst Dustin Rhodes. No.
Well, speaking of worst Dustin Rhodes, let's go
is
to...
You gave your worst
no, but it's part of the short list. So I developed a short list for worst gimmick. I had plenty of options here and I probably left some off.
Oh my God, yeah. This one was also really difficult for me because these were all great.
Oklahoma.
Yes.
The Powers That Be.
Yes.
The Dog.
Ugh.
Tank Abbott. You can take that as you will.
Not recent Tank Abbott. I think like earlier Tank Abbott. Like Big Al Tank Abbott.
Seven. The Demon Dale Torborg.
Dale Torborg?
And Elizabeth as Easily Kidnapped Woman.
I think there's only one answer.
I think we had fun with... a couple of these. Mm-hmm. Maybe not the dog, but...
No, that was not fun. That was just, why are we here?
I think we both have to go with Oklahoma
it
here.
It has to be Oklahoma. For who he was and for what he did to women's wrestling, as well as commentary, he is the worst thing, I think, to come out of WCW as a whole. I don't even think that anything else skims the surface that was as bad as Oklahoma.
Yeah, there is just also the element of mean-spiritedness with
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
And goddamn... And that was one of those that I'm like, hey, he disappears after that. No, he doesn't.
He's still there.
So yeah, I think Oklahoma is the easy winner for worst gimmick.
I also have an honorable mention for this category that is a write-in.
Okay.
The MIA. They have a stupid gimmick. They all got stupid fucking names. And then they didn't stick with them.
Van Hammer, who, again, we're not going to see him again.
Yeah.
It got changed before it made it to air.
Oh,
General Rection was the only one that changed because he got promoted because Booker left.
That's stupid. There shouldn't have been promotions. No, they all got stupid. Like Chavo being Lieutenant Loco. That's offensive. Corporal Cajun, that's stupid. Can I remember all of these?
Major Stash.
Major Stash, huge erection. It's all fucking
huge
terrible.
Was it was a rank there.
It's fucking terrible. And I think it's offensive to the talent that is actually contained within that faction.
Yeah, on the other hand, fuck Bill DeMott, so get named after a penis.
Yeah. Anyway, fuck Oklahoma though. Overall, yeah. Fuck Oklahoma.
Let's move on to a category that does not have a counterpart. It is best non-wrestler. This was a little open to interpretation, but who did you come up with?
Again, I have an honorable mention.
Okay.
I have a lot of, like, I couldn't decide between two. Yeah. But this one was very obviously Ralphus for me.
Still. Okay.
Even with some of his in-ring work. I just recently listened to the first match where he and Norman tagged up again. And the fucking pile of grass turf. Oh, and he's just chucking trash cans off of it. Come on. This man is an absolute gem.
Who's your honorable mention?
Pamela Pumpkins.
Like, fuck you. No, she's not.
Pamela Pumpkins makes me giggle.
I went with one that it's complicated because, like, she is kind of a wrestler, but they don't present her as such, and most of her work has been in a non-wrestling role. I went with Daphne.
Ah, see? I agree with you, but I also disagree with you.
I think Daphne's character work has been great. I mean,
yes.
How many times are we just looking at her during segments, for better or worse?
Yeah, do you remember the segment where she's just standing behind David and making faces at Ric Flair? It's the best.
Yes, and the reason why I'm like, I don't think she qualifies as a wrestler for this, is anytime she was in the ring, they treated it as like, she's on the same level as Tammy Lynn Sitch, who's never wrestled her. Oh my God, she happened to like fall ass backwards into like the Cruiserweight title, where she won it via pinning Tammy, and then beat Crowbar via shenanigans. Like, there's just not a women's division for her to
succeed in.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I love me a Daphne.
Remember when Spice joined up with Medusa and that went nowhere?
No. Oh, Starkid. Spice. Yeah.
Remember
God,
Nitro
I miss
Girls?
Spice. Yeah. I remember the Nitro Girls. They still kind of talk about them in like the in-between segments.
You know what? Actually, I have an honorable mention. It's Beef.
Stop. Do not. Beef? That doesn't count, right?
No, true.
That doesn't count.
Next year. Let's move into what I think was the hardest one by far, which is the best feud and the worst feud.
Oh, God. No, and worst feud was easy for me.
I guess the worst feud was easy. But best feud, I'll tell you up front, I don't feel good about mine. But Emily, what did you come up with for best feud?
I went with Kidman versus Vampiro. Only because of the matches that it created out of that feud. It was like, it created good, fun matches. The feud, I can't remember what they were arguing about, but like them pairing up and like being against each other was good.
I'm giving mine to something that I'm going to simultaneously describe as coherent and note that it had a bad finish at every pay-per-view match it did.
Oh no.
Which is just DDP versus the Establishment.
Yeah. I was kind of going with DDP versus Kimberly for a minute. That was stupid.
Just the trio of him versus Jarrett and Bischoff Mike Awesome. And it's like, you know what? There was some good in-ring action with that as well.
Yeah.
And it kept somebody good in the world title picture and like not Kevin Nash. So.
True. Yeah. I think we both went with the best vehicle to give us good wrestling matches, not good storytelling. That being said, worst feud.
I went with Hogan versus Kidman.
Yeah.
And I think there is some heavy lifting there of Hulk Hogan being like, no, I'm doing something good for Billy Kidman. It's like, no, you're not.
How dare you even think that you are, you big, bald, lion motherfucker.
You big, bald son of a bitch. And I don't even know if you remember, going into the Great American Bash, they just like gave up on the feud halfway through.
Oh,
Kidman
I do vaguely remember this.
Into
yes.
a different feud. It's like, oh no, you're still facing Hogan though.
Mine harkens back to another category that we've already spoken about. My worst feud, Medusa versus Oklahoma.
Yeah.
I don't really feel like I need to explain that one very much.
Probably not.
Fuck Oklahoma.
Our next award is one that we argued about extensively last time. I don't know how we're going to do this time, but it's best on interviews / best promo, all that.
This one was also very hard
for yes.
me. Once again, I gave an honorable mention to Conan. I will say that right up front. I love Conan. I think he's funny. He says the same thing every time he gets on the mic, which is why he's only an honorable mention. Those strawberries and the olales and the feel that. It's great. But I gave it to DDP.
I'm also going with DDP.
Really? Oh, no arguments this year.
No, I think, yeah, he is the most consistent promo.
Yeah.
And
consistency, exactly.
Yeah, he divvies up his verbiage enough because I think it helps he's doing promos opposite Jeff Jarrett, who just comes off repetitive every time.
Yes.
Unfortunately, we didn't get enough Sid for me to be like, all right, well, it's going to be him.
Sid did not win any of my awards this year.
Hogan might have been an ironic write-in here. I could maybe, like, the problem is Hogan up until Russo comes back might have been an honorable writing because we get some terrible gold from him in these hills.
I also wrote in maybe Flair for the same kind of reason.
But he's been bogged down with with Russo. The other honorable mention I'll note is the Mamalukes. I think
their
backstage
early stuff
interviews.
Was good.
Yeah.
The cheese sandwiches.
Johnny the Bull.
Oh, and the dude that was with him originally. Tony Marinaro.
No, I thought you were going to note that Johnny the Bull goes on to become Relic in TNA. And Emily, I don't know if you're aware of this, but Relic Backwards is our next award, which is Best and Worst Pay-Per-View.
No, it's not. That's not how spelling works, you dumb.
Well, too bad. That's our next award anyway.
I had a really hard time with this category as well.
I actually had an easy time with this one.
I gave mine to Slamboree. Slamboree was the start of a lot of stuff, but it was not the worst of a lot of stuff. So I still had hope when we were listening to this pay-per-view. And it was not, nothing was bad on it.
Yeah, there's some decent
matches. There were good matches.
That's
it was
also
rated
my
highly.
Pick for what
oh,
it's worth.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was listening back to our review of it earlier today. And I was like, okay, like of all the other pay-per-view episodes, I seem to hate this one the least. It's the start of a lot of things, which is frustrating. But it's not bad yet. So there's that at least.
Yeah. Go figure, the one that's main evented by David Arquette is the best one.
Yeah, that was the problem that I was having. I was like, am I really going to give best pay-per-view to the one that's headlined by David Arquette?
But that match isn't bad. It's overbooked to fuck, but like...
Yeah, I'm like, I was having a really hard time with it. But yeah, that I guess that shows where the line is.
Yeah.
That's the bar.
And Emily, what is your worst pay-per-view?
So... I have to give it to the one that while we were recording, I literally said, this is the worst pay-per-view I've ever seen.
And I believe I noted so far.
Yes, you did. But I didn't say that about anything else in this list.
Okay.
It's Halloween Havoc 1999, baby.
You were very mad at Sting.
I was so angry. I kind of stand by it. I understand why I was angry, and I'm still a little mad about it. Like, respect your sport, motherfucker. And in that show, you allude to so many things that happen at Bash at the Beach. I don't think you realize how many little sprinkles of Bash at the Beach you had put into the last 2 years of our content.
Oh, I was just really enjoying fucking with you.
Well, that too. Because there was one that was like, when I was talking about the Sting moment, I was saying like, I can't believe he just like lays down and Sting doesn't do anything about it. And you're like, oh, there's a moment later on that you're either going to love or you're going to hate.
Yep.
I was like, you were talking about fucking Bash at the Beach. But yeah, I said it out loud. I have to stand by what I said 2 years ago. So Halloween Havoc 99.
Yeah, I ended up going with a different one.
What'd you do?
It might be recency bias, but goddamn, the Great American Bash is pretty fucking terrible.
It was just boring. My last note on that show was, this is the most boring pay-per-view I've ever seen. But yeah, I don't blame you for this one.
Yeah, I think it's just weird and bad and... The Goldberg heel turn at the end, too, just to, like, really stomp out your dreams.
And this was the one where the monster truck was looming, right?
Going into the build of this.
Oh, okay. That was funny, though.
Well, the monster truck was going after Rick Steiner and Tank Abbott, and they were in the Handicap Asylum match that just ends.
Yes. The Handicap Asylum match that is so... The Asylum matches as a whole, I'm so glad those are gone. They were so bad.
Yeah.
It was just like this tiny little ring inside of a ring. Why don't we just use the ring?
And the Human Torch match.
Oh, that was a Great American Bash, wasn't it?
Yep. Jesus. All right, we got 5 awards left. Let's go to Best Tag Team next.
Best Tag Team.
Shortlist I came up with for this, I feel like we're kind of the only options. It was the Mamalukes, the Revolution, Three Count, Team Package, and the Filthy Animals.
I'll tell you what, it's not Team Package.
Yeah.
And if you had asked me this at the midpoint, it would have easily been Filthy Animals. But Filthy Animals have been done so dirty in the last year of content that it's just, I can't give it to them.
Yeah.
So I did end up giving it to the tag team that makes me smile and love them every single time they are on screen. And they give us surprisingly good matches every time. Three Count, baby.
Yeah, I think it's Three Count
it's
as well.
It's gotta be Three Count.
Their batting average is pretty high yes. for what they get.
Yes. They are always the best match on the card. They are so much fun to watch. They're usually the opening match, which, like, I stand by that a pay-per-view needs to open with a high-energy, good, fun match. They are always that.
Yeah, I think the only reason I didn't include the Young Dragons on this list is the only good things they've done is with Three Count.
Exactly.
And Three Count has done other good things that aren't with the Young Dragons.
Yes, exactly. Like, the Young Dragons did that whole thing with the cat at Bash at the Beach. We can't give it to them.
So we're on to Best In-Ring Work.
The words in-ring do a lot of heavy lifting for me in this category.
Best, like, wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
So the shortlist I came up with is Jeff Jarrett, DDP, Booker T, Ric Flair, and Canyon.
Mm-hmm.
Did you pick someone out of the five?
I did.
Who'd you pick?
You're going to be surprised, but maybe not because of my recent conversations with you off the podcast. I'm giving it to Jeff Jarrett.
I get that.
He is a good wrestler.
Yeah.
He's very good at what he does. He is a very professional man. And he's willing to do what it takes for the business. But in the ring, he does really tremendous work.
I think, yeah, he's just pushed beyond his station is the problem.
Yes. Who'd you go with? I'm assuming off the list?
No, I went with Booker T.
Yeah, that's also correct.
I think he's just a little more consistent. And I think he's also had more variety in opponents to where it just helps his case a little bit more.
Yeah, no, I wholeheartedly agree. Like, we have said multiple times that Booker T is the best wrestler on this show. And it's probably that over some of these other guys because he's also given, you know, good storylines, good gimmicks. Like, he's more interesting to watch because of what else is going on. And I can't say the same for Jeff Jarrett because he's a pain in the ass backstage.
Yeah, I think we'll have more to say with Booker when we get to the MVP conversation. Jeff Jarrett did not make that list, but
no, he did not.
I think let's move into our final three, which is best bit, worst bit, and MVP. We did three each for best and worst bits, and then just one MVP. So, Emily, let's start. What are your three best bits?
So my three best bits are Crowbar on commentary. Such a moment. Such a mood.
Brat summer for Crowbar. Very demure.
Oh my god, very cutesy, very demure. That came and went in culture so quickly. So Crowbar on commentary. Young Dragons and Three Count, always a great time. The Mamalukes wedding was also very close on this three list, but you know what my top is.
Yes.
It has to be the wrestling match that ends in the ocean, which I kept looking at you being like, what pay-per-view was that? That was the best pay-per-view. And you're like, oh, that was just a Nitro.
Can you name the four wrestlers in that match?
Lex Luger, Sting, pass.
Because it's the two that are still in the ring during that.
Ric Flair.
Yes.
And
Sting's partner.
Vampiro?
Yes.
Oh my god.
Now, technically, you are incorrect about one thing.
Mm.
Lex Luger was not in that match.
The total package?
Yes.
Whatever. It's not just the finish of that match that I love so much. It's not just that bit. It's also the dip. The seven-layer taco dip that becomes a player in the very beginning of this.
I know what dip you meant, but just for a second, I was picturing that being like the dip from Who Framed Roger Rabbit where he throws it on Lex Luger and he just like shrinks and dies.
No, it was the fact that the dip got thrown and then they went into the pool. And I know that those poor pool boys had to go recalculate the fucking chlorine after this because of the food. And then the pin being counted in the ocean with the crowd coming around them in the sand. Amazing.
Hold on. I want to amend my joke. You put Lex Luger in the dip from Who Framed Roger Rabbit, you get Chuck Palumbo.
Jesus.
What have you done, Chuck Palumbo?
Nothing. You're nothing. Go eat some dip.
So I have a completely different three.
Okay.
My number three was not on our short list because it was only my best bit. It was not yours. It was the Scott Steiner fake retirement and joining the NWO because it was such weird range of promo from Scott Steiner that I didn't know he had.
Okay.
And like look, I knew he didn't retire, but I'm like, this is just a well-done segment. Like, he sold it well.
Sure, yeah. I'll take it. I'll give you that, yeah.
Yeah, I think we noted, like, this is, this is Scott Reichsteiner, or whatever his actual name is.
Oh, yes. This is not Scott Steiner.
Rickensteiner.
This is Braun's uncle.
Number two, I did go with the Mama Luke's family wedding.
Yeah, that was such a great segment.
Especially the promo at the end when, like, when the Mama Luke's get, like, beat down and they issue the challenge for the Sicilian stretcher match.
Yes.
It just, it's a fun vibe that actually, like, ties into, a decent match.
The match was stupid. Don't give it that. But the segment was fun.
Yes.
Yes.
And then number one, from the same episode as the suplex into the ocean.
Nothing else happened on that episode. I don't know what you're talking about.
That's the wall, brother.
I cannot believe that's the same episode. That's got to be like top 10 nitros of all time.
Honorable mention for the Yappapai strap.
Honorable mention? You think the Yappapai is worthy of best bit? Are you kidding?
In an ironic sense, yes.
Jesus.
Same with That's the Wall. It's completely ironic.
It's a moment.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It's a mood. It's a vibe. It's a bomb.
It's the wall, brother.
Oh, God.
Oh, man.
Yeah, That's the Wall just broke me at the time, and I still just laugh about it. So I think that's the best bit.
Fair enough.
All right, and we were spoiled for choice here. So, Emily, what is your worst bits?
Okay. Do you remember the match that was Terry Funk just, like, stopping in the middle of the match to go have a conversation with Eric Bischoff, and then Kimberly coming out and cutting a promo in the middle of the ring?
Well, they just brawl to the back, and then...
And then they just stop wrestling.
Well, we didn't see them, but...
That match.
Yeah.
That match where Kimberly's just like, well, I guess the wrestling's over. My turn. Like, fuck you. Absolutely fuck you.
And Bischoff wins that match.
I hated that. I hated that so much. Not as much as I hated my number two choice, though. Number two, Tank Abbott versus Big Al, where Tank pulls a knife on Big Al.
He was just going to give him a shave, Emily.
He cut his beard with scissors, right? He pulls a knife on Big Al. Well, I think Big Al also stands on Tank's face during that. Like, that whole match was just a fucking disaster. Oh. I don't know how to, like... I remember having the moment during that where we, like, were watching it live, but for the show. And I had to stop watching at that moment and, like, go pace around the kitchen and just be like, I need to talk you through what just happened. Like, I need to reiterate what I just watched.
You need to verify.
I need you to tell me that was real, not a fever dream. Yeah. But, because I've already mentioned him twice, the worst bit has to be motherfucking Oklahoma. Like I said, he's the worst thing to come out of WCW, bar none.
Yeah.
Russo has nothing on him. Bischoff has nothing on him. It's Oklahoma. For what you said, for the mean-spiritedness of it.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, and now I'm heated. You go now.
I have one in common.
Okay.
My number three is just Mark Madden in
as
general.
A person, yep. Yeah, that too.
Mark, just him replacing Bobby Heenan, ugh, him just snoochy boochies, just adding a level of sleaze to the product.
Yeah, it really, like, takes the class factor down. Like, this was never a classy product, but Tony Schiavone, damn, he was trying. Mark Madden ruins all that.
Yeah, Mark Madden just feels like Oklahoma at an 8. Like, not quite at a 10. It's just like...
A little bit, yeah. No,
you're
right.
Just a little... Just, like, pump the brakes a little. That way, we're able to consistently do this, and it's not called for you to get off the air.
Yes, exactly. God, what a man.
Number two, I went with the New Blood Gauntlet of Kevin Nash just burying the entire mid-card and pinning...
In, like, 2 minutes?
And pinning them without even touching them.
Yes.
I think part of the reason why there's not a New Blood anymore is that...
That gauntlet match, that was so infuriating because, like, a gauntlet match. It's like maybe 5-10 people trying to bring down this one big guy. It's one at a time. It's one by one. And they all just went all at once and just were like, fuck you.
Yeah, it's not. Ugh.
And it took literally two, 3 minutes maybe?
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah, that's valid.
And then my number one, I don't think you buried this enough, it's Big Al versus Tank Abbott in a skins match.
Oh, I forgot it was a skins match. No, I could have kept going, but I felt myself getting hot.
Yeah. So. I think you undersold how bad the in-ring action is before the random pulling a knife. The build to this was also garbage.
Yes, the build really did add to how terrible it was. But the brawling before, it was just like corner punches and just like slap fight, right?
They just don't know how to work. Neither one's a wrestler.
Yeah, they're like MMA fighters.
God, and then we never saw Big Al again either.
Bless that.
I think that is the worst match we've seen.
And hopefully we'll see.
I mean, look, we still got a little while left, but I think let's go into our final award. It is the MVP of season two, or whatever this is. The shortlist, and I'll give you how many times they've been MVP during this time. It is Sid Vicious with 4 MVPs, Goldberg with 4 MVPs, Bret Hart with 6 MVPs, DDP with 9 MVPs, and Booker T with 13 MVPs.
God, that jump between DDP and Booker.
Yeah, admittedly, but 6 of them are in the last month.
Mm, that is telling.
Yes.
Both DDP and Booker are very deserving of this. DDP for
this
more
is a two-horse race.
Yes, it is. But DDP has been in the story or in the race for longer, I feel.
Yeah, Brett was dominating early MVPs and then, you know, got concussed and retired. And so it's like, yeah. He's out from there. But I personally, I know Booker has more. I think this is still the DDP era here. And
I think so.
I think going forward, I think it's probably going to be Booker for our next one. But I think DDP is holding the show together more. I think Booker was able to kind of snipe in some MVPs from lower down. And I think, as I said, when choosing him for best feud, I think without DDP on this card, I think the show goes to people who cannot hold their own as well.
That's probably fair. That is probably fair. I mean, like I said, DDP's been on for longer. He is holding the show together. Right now, he's not here. So there's also that whole aspect of it. No, DDP is definitely the reason why we want to continue watching, or we have continued watching. However, we have said so many times throughout our watch of these last 2 years of content that Booker T is just the secret star. Like, he keeps coming in and we're like, damn, is he the best? Is he one of the best wrestlers right now? Like, why is he so low on the card? Booker T has been silently just crushing it on the way, like, from the bottom up. We've only seen DDP at the top. We got to watch Booker climb up. And I think there is something to be said there for his talent level and how much he, like, cares about where he stands in the business. I think he's my MVP.
Okay. I think there's a bad choice.
No, there's really not. Like, DDP 100% deserves it, too. If you'd given it to Sid, I would have said, let's stop and consider this.
I think it's a weird problem of Booker has worked with way worse talent. So when he pulls anything decent out of it, it's more of a testament to him versus, like, of course Jeff Jarrett and DDP is going to be a decent match.
Yeah, of course.
So, yeah, it's a weird problem of working with different talent levels. Yeah. So how do you kind of measure that? And I think let's sneak in a little bonus award because we never actually went back to clarify something we said we would. And that is, what is the worst show of our 100-episode extravaganza? The four options were Uncensored 96, Heroes of Wrestling, Sold Out 97, and WrestleMania 9. That's a killer's row right
that
there.
Was. Before we get into this, I want to just like say that it has been really incredible to sit here and do 117 episodes of this show with you. And like the fact that we've been doing this for 4 years is really incredible. So the fact that we even had a killer's row of four shows at our 100th episode is saying a lot. So thank you, Nick. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, everybody who's been supporting us along the way. This has been really great. That said, Heroes of Wrestling. Heroes of Wrestling was so hard to get through.
Yeah.
I was never going to give it to WrestleMania 9. It's the best WrestleMania.
Honestly, I think WrestleMania 9 is the best of the four.
I think so. Sold Out 97 was a time. I remember having fun with that.
I do think Sold Out 97 is the worst because, as I kind of said at the time, look, Heroes of Wrestling is a show gone wrong.
Yes.
Sold Out is exactly what they wanted. Nothing went off the rails there, according to them.
No, that's exactly what they wanted to happen. Yeah.
Fucking Jeff Katz, fuck you.
Oh, man. I remember us, like, kind of losing our minds during Sold Out 97, like, in a fun way. So I remember the experience of watching it being fun. I don't remember having fun watching Heroes of Wrestling.
I think you gave the woman who won Miss NWO your MVP.
I might have. Bless her.
Oh, Christ. All right. Well.
All that said.
Well, I think That's going to do it for this episode and this year of the Butts in the Seats podcast. But if you disagree or want to have any of your own kind of picks for this, you can listen to all of our back catalog. Everywhere podcasts are found except for SoundCloud. You can also comment and tweet and all that, your opinions of our picks and the episodes and your favorite memories of the last 4 years with us on social media at Butts in the Pod, except for Facebook, where it's the Butts in the Seats podcast. And finally, patreon.com/buttsintheseats. $5 a month gets you about 20 bonus episodes at this point. Yeah. I think episode 19 is going to be coming out within the week.
Yeah, we are chugging through TNA's new Monday Night Wars over on the Patreon. And we have a bunch of other stuff coming. We watched the Jesse Ventura story. We're going to dive into his conspiracy theory show. But I am also, and I've been saying this for like a year at this point, it feels, I've been watching the WrestleManias. WrestleMania 4 and 5 are in the can and will be posted within the week that you're hearing this.
Well, Emily, any closing thoughts on this show, the Bitsies, or the last 4 years?
I mean, let's just talk about the last 2 years. Like, think about how much our lives have changed in the last 2 years. We've done a lot in 2 years, and that has included keeping up with this self-inflicted, rigorous posting schedule.
Yeah.
But we wouldn't do it without the support of listeners or each other. So this has been a really good experience, a lot of fun. So I'm glad you guys are trucking along with us.
I have to credit and blame your goldfish brain for why I'm like, we have to keep doing it or you will actively forget everything.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right for that.
That's why I had to give you a spreadsheet for the bit season. Like, here's all this stuff.
Study.
Maybe next year on the anniversary, I'll get to give you another quiz.
Oh, God.
But don't worry, there's no quiz in the next episode, because next episode is ECW Heatwave 2000.
Woo!
Yeah, I keep forgetting, next up is not a Nitro. No. It's a little side journey.
Yeah, we're taking a little break.
That's probably for the best, but
yeah.
I don't know what's on that card at all, so I'm going to be walking in pretty blind.
That's good. I like when we go into things blind.
But after that, we're back to Nitro and chugging towards New Blood Rising. Let's go. But until we get to them, I'm Nick.
I am Emily.
And thanks for 4 great years here at the Butts in the Seats podcast.
Bye.